Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
We are going to take on this article, Fred. This is about a new genetic clock research. You know how they use genetic clocks to figure out how many millions of years ago something evolved into something else?
Yeah, they said mitochondrially was some hundreds of thousands of years old. And they were wrong on that, but yeah.
Right. Yep. So this is new genetic clock research, and it's by Dr. Jeanson.
Yeah, Dr. Nathaniel Jeanson. He has a PhD in cell and developmental biology from a college. I think you might have heard of it. I think it's Harvard. Yeah, Harvard.
Good credentials to write about this topic. And his first sentence, I think, indicates where this is going to lead. He says, does a 6,000-year-old Earth, this is Dr. Nathaniel Jeanson.
Of Harvard.
Yes. Well, that's where he got his degree. Does a 6,000-year-old Earth match the findings of modern science? We can almost guess how he's going to answer, but Fred, let's not guess. You read the article. What does he believe about the age of the Earth?
He thinks it's about 6,000 years.
Whoa!
So he's a creationist.
He is a creationist. And, you know, the atheists who say only uneducated people believe in creation. Yeah, except for most of the fathers of the natural sciences.
That's right.
The physical sciences, right? And except for Nathaniel Jeanson, PhD from Harvard. So Fred, his answer is the evidence is the Earth is less than 10,000 years. And this is a fun article. He says there's an assumption that evolutionists make about constant natural processes and constant rates. Well, if you take those assumptions and you look at the new discoveries of how much difference there is in DNA, you come up with amazing conclusions.
Yeah, this is awesome because we've seen clocks before with humans. And we know that, you know, when they recalibrated the mitochondrial DNA clock, she turned out to be a mere 6,000 years old. I'm quoting directly from the evolutionist biologist. Yeah. And she said, of course, that can't be the case. And as we pointed out on the show before, what they did to get the date back up to hundreds of thousands of years is they mixed it in chimp DNA with
chimp
their sampling.
DNA, right. So they do circular reasoning, right?
So this article here, we're actually going to look at both humans.
We're going to compare apples to apples, not apples to oranges.
Yeah, and we're going to compare flies to flies. I mean, we're going to talk about flies,
fruit flies, worms, fleas, and human beings.
Yep.
And look at the differences in our DNA. But not all of our DNA, right? Just the
mitochondrial DNA that we get from our mom. So it's only transferred down from the women, right?
Right. Exactly.
It's a power plant in our cells, the mitochondria.
It's a bit easier to use to make calculations because you don't have all that recombinant DNA going on.
That's right.
Because you get it from your mom. And that's because mom contributes the ovum, which is a large cell. And the man contributes the sperm, which is a tiny cell, and for the most part, he's contributing the DNA in that cell. And so it's the ovum that has all these energy factories and all the mitochondrial DNA to go with it. So, Fred, there's also Y chromosomal atom. Maybe we'll get to that later. Yeah. And this article is about genetic clocks. I love one about histones.
Histones?
You know those little spindles, sort of, that the DNA is wound up on these histone proteins.
Sounds like a band in the 50s, the histones.
Well, histones tell an amazing story. I hope we could get to that. But so what Nathaniel Jeanson does is he starts off with like a tutorial.
Yeah, so each species has a clock, basically, a ticking clock that we can measure. And basically, we're measuring the mitochondrial DNA and how it mutates. So we can kind of look at over time, generation to generation, we've got this clock going on, this ticking.
So the more the differences, the more the mutations, the longer that species should have existed on the Earth. I mean, that's the evolutionary paradigm.
Yeah.
That's their assumption. So DNA, in this article,
kind of
by
like
the way,
more, the more rust you have on a car, the older the car is.
Right. Especially if it was made in the 80s. in Detroit.
Boy, that's true.
Right? So, Fred, this article by Dr. Jeanson is available at ICR.org, the Institute for Creation
Research. Right now it's on the front page, so highly recommend it. Great article.
Just great. So he points out, Dr. Jeanson, that DNA is passed on imperfectly from the parent to the offspring, and therefore each generation grows more genetically distant from prior generations. That's like Dr. Sanford, John Sanford, Cornell geneticist, who's written a whole book on this, genetic entropy. So with each successive generation, there will be more and more genetically distant
more and more rust on that mitochondrial DNA.
Exactly.
So he talks about, you know, the animals that were on the ark. So we're going to have mitochondrial DNA mutating since that event. And plus you got the creatures that survived off the ark.
Oh, yeah.
Because God didn't require every animal type to be taken on the ark. There were things like what? Insects? Were insects on the ark?
No.
They don't have a soul. Saved.
There might have been a lot on the ark.
Yeah.
But, right. And fish.
Yeah, so they're fish. Yeah. Why do you need to take fish on an ark in a flood?
Right.
So, you know, so basically you can look at mitochondrial DNA, and it goes back to maybe a whole bunch of females, you know, at creation.
Like dolphins.
Oh, by the way, did God create just two dolphins on day six?
No. Some people think that, but that's just because they don't think about it too carefully.
Yeah, because there are only two humans. There's only Adam and Eve.
But dolphins, he could have created 3 million dolphins on the earth.
Wouldn't the earth have been teeming with life?
Oh, absolutely.
So if he had written a Bible for the dogs, do you think it'd be in the beginning Spot and Buffy?
No.
No, it'd be a whole range
whole
of
bunch
of dogs.
There would have been
a gazillion.
Least,
it doesn't
dogs.
Say that explicitly, but it makes a lot of sense.
Well, the Garden of Eden was lush and
filled. Yeah.
The whole world was filled with life.
Yeah.
The birds of the air and the seas, the earth was teeming with life. That's a good word you used earlier. And so a giraffe, there would have been two giraffes on the ark.
Mm-hmm.
So all giraffes, their mitochondrial DNA go back to that one female giraffe of the pair. But of creatures that live in the sea, like, say, swordfish, their mitochondrial DNA could go back to as many of the females that God created.
On that particular day five, yes.
On day five, right? Okay, so Dr. Jeanson is talking us through this, and then he says that the biological facts of the differences in the DNA of these different organisms, those are biological facts. How different are they?
Yeah.
Like fruit flies. Look at the mitochondrial DNA of 1,000 fruit flies. Is there one difference? Two different? How many letters of DNA are in the mitochondrial DNA? I know that the nuclear DNA for humans is 3 billion.
3 billion, yeah.
Base pairs.
So the power plant, the mitochondrial DNA is about 16,000.
16,000.
So it's a lot smaller.
And it's not recombinant, so it's easier to study.
It is.
So he says the differences, like in fruit flies, of their mitochondrial DNA are facts.
Yep.
Like this one has a difference in two places as compared to that one. Those are the facts. And he says those facts help us to compare the young Earth model to the evolutionary model.
Yeah, because both will have predictions on how fast this rate should be and what you should be able to come up with.
Yeah, exactly. And he says that the true age of any given kind of organism should be reflected in the amount of diversity in their DNA.
Mm-hmm.
That is just so cool. I absolutely love it. And there's a big difference in the predictions, right? We predict these kinds have only been here for less than 10,000 years. The evolutionists say for millions, many millions. Hundreds of millions, some of them.
So it's really cool. He's got these charts here. And, you know, the first one is mitochondrial DNA differences between humans. And so he shows a really good bar graph where he's got, here's the prediction, the range of DNA differences.
Fred.
If evolution is true, and he only assumes 180,000 years for human evolution.
I'm going to put you in my will.
Yeah,
I'm going to leave you. You're my favorite person in the world because you told me to read this article.
Well, I saw this today. It's incredible.
These charts are enough to get me to dance on my kitchen table. This is so exciting.
It is so cool.
This is like the helium retention in zircon crystals,
right?
How the creationists predicted there'd be tons of helium, and the evolutionists say, well, they're a billion years old. There'll be no helium, and there's tons of helium.
Yeah, yep.
This is awesome. So explain the prediction to the audience. What is this first chart about humans?
Yeah, so the first chart shows they expect the DNA differences in this mitochondrial DNA over time if evolution is true, and it's only assuming 180,000 years. And, you know, evolutionists believe that humans evolved from a common ancestor with apes like 5 million years ago, right? So this going 180,000 years.
So that's very generous to the evolutionist, and it's a relatively short time frame in an evolutionary perspective. Yet he's saying, how many differences should there be if humans have been here for 180,000 years? And they do measure, right? They do actual laboratory measurements to see how often do mutations occur in human mitochondrial DNA.
Yeah. So based on this range, which has a, you know, a little bit of a, you know, there's a range to this rate.
Right.
He comes up with the number of differences, if evolution is true, for 180,000 years of 124 to 290 differences.
So now, average about 200.
Yeah, let's just say 200. Now, the range that we would expect if the humans were 10,000 years. So he's going to 10,000 as a convenience, that's well within, you know, that's definitely totally against an evolutionary worldview.
Yeah, it's a biblical
worldview. Let's go with 10,000, and he said the range would be 7 to 16, so let's say roughly 10.
Okay, so, and now when he's making these numbers, he's just making these up, right? He's just pulling them out. He's sucking them out of the tip of his thumb, right?
No.
In fact, he points out, having a PhD from Harvard on cell and developmental biology, Dr. Nathaniel Jeanson points out that we can present this with mathematical rigor.
Yes.
He presents an equation. You predict the mitochondrial DNA diversity based on straightforward calculations that the evolutionists have been publishing for many years now, because they figured this would prove their case.
Yeah. Right?
And just like they thought with fossils.
Yeah.
We did the show last week. Right. They spent 150 years looking for fossils. And the conclusion of the matter is there are no transitional fossils.
Yep.
It's a big failure. Darwin failed the fossil test.
Yes.
So now they've spent years working out this simple equation about DNA differences. What is the measured rate of changes and mutations, and how long has the species been alive?
Yeah.
That's it.
Three variables. So we've got these expectations. If evolution is true, and if it's not true, how many DNA mutations would you expect to see? So
well,
now
tell
we get
what
the
they
actual.
Are. Remind me. So if evolution is true,
there should be about 200 for humans. We're just talking
for
humans.
For humans. And what if creation is true?
And if creation is true, roughly between 7 and 16 mutations to the mitochondrial DNA, the small chunk of DNA.
So call that 11.
Okay, we'll call it 11.
11 and a half.
So now we know the differences that we've measured, and the average turns out to be, do we got to go to commercial break? We can tell them on the other end.
Okay,
I'll go ahead. Okay, we got these great DVDs in our store.
That's why we're broke. We don't do commercials on Real Science Radio.
John Sanford, don't we have any of his stuff?
You know, the best molecular biology DVD ever produced, we sell at our store, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store. It's The Programming of Life by Dr. Don Johnson. He might be in the studio this summer. We've interviewed him on a couple of occasions. The best molecular biology DVD video ever produced.
Yeah, and if you like a really short URL, rsr.org. I really like that. So, okay, back to the show.
Yeah.
The numbers are in. And the numbers are the average DNA differences turn out to be in humans of mitochondrial DNA is 10.
I'm as excited as a silicon crystal.
Okay, now, if evolution is true, if we descended even just 180,000 years ago, it should be 200.
And if it was 3 million years ago, it should
be. Who knows? It'd be a lot more, yeah.
There's only 16,000.
It turns out to be 10. Oops.
10. So the creationist prediction, based on this mathematically rigorous equation, which is in the article, people could check it out for themselves, shows that once again, unlike Bill Nye, who said creationists can't make predictions, this is going to go in our / predictions, because this is a prediction of our model.
Yeah. And you know what? He didn't stop at humans. That's what's so cool about this article, because we already kind of knew a little bit about what mitochondrial DNA was showing with the clock showing 6,000 years.
Yeah, very few changes, right? In the Y chromosomal atom.
Yeah.
Remember the first study?
Hardly any changes.
How
and
many
guess what?
Changes did they find? The
Zero.
First big study. None.
Zippo.
It freaked out the evolutionists. Yeah. Because the Y chromosome, it's a smaller chromosome, but it's still huge.
Yeah.
In comparison.
And how many Y chromosomes were on the ark?
There was one.
One. So, hey.
Because Noah gave it to his three
and
sons.
And so that's what we see when we look at genetics and the Y chromosome across the globe. But, hey, back to the big story.
Yeah.
So he goes to fruit flies now. So now data has come in on the fruit flies. And if the fruit flies, which are supposed to be 20 million years old at least, right?
Okay, that's an evolutionary estimate of when their kind or their family, say, or order, when they showed up on Earth.
Yeah. And if you look at the range of what they'd expect for the DNA differences, it comes in at about basically 100,000 to 2 million. That's what we should
see. That's the range, because the equation to come up with these ranges.
Yes, you plug it into the equation.
And you need the measured mutation rates.
Yep.
So they study the DNA of fruit flies in the lab, and papers are published with different mutation rates. One paper will say, well, there's one mutation per gene every, say,
X amount of,
60 years. Another will say there's one mutation per gene every 190 years.
Yeah.
So there's a range.
So they come up with a range, and again, it was 100,000 to 2 million. The range for a fruit fly that's 10,000 years old is 50 to 1,000, okay? So the data's in. And what else do we have in the store, Bob?
We have the Design of Life series, Flight, the Genius of Birds.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Metamorphosis, the butterflies.
Yeah, that's from Illustria Media, right?
Yeah, just fabulous.
Oh, yeah, they always put out
And
great
we have
stuff.
These on Blu-ray also.
Yeah.
Cool. So what happened with the fruit flies?
The fruit flies.
Which prediction came through?
Well, this is going to be
tens of thousands or about 1,000?
Somehow, I don't think this will be a big shock to the audience. The average was 1,000. 1,168. So, hey, the range for the fruit fly, if it's in a biblical time frame of 0 to 10,000 years, is 49 to 1,000.
Right.
If it's the evolutionary 20 million years, it's supposed to be 100,000 to 2 million. The average came in at 1,168. It falls right in line with this fruit fly being no more than, you know, really 10,000 years. It's not that old. Where are they coming up with 20 million years for this? The data doesn't work for them.
All right. Then we have roundworms, and they say they've been around for 18 million years. So you get up to like, they should have mutated so often that it's virtually indistinguished. You know, just wild diversity.
Yeah, these guys tend to mutate more roundworms. And I can see what that they're so, you know.
And the prediction for the creationists, they've been here less than 10,000 years, it'd be around 1,000 or so, up to 1,500 or so. The actual measured mutations are 1,600.
Yep.
So again, it's right in
there. Right in there, yep.
And then the last one is the water fleas, and that's similar too, right? They think they've been around for 7 million years, so they should have 100,000 differences. We predict maybe 150 to 200. They have 650.
650.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's off, but it's not off by the order of magnitude off, and it's in the ballpark. So the creationist predictions, Fred, come in
it's awesome.
So well,
so well presented.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got a table in here that shows the average years between single mutations. So if evolution is true, then humans should have 36,000 of these average years. Fruit flies, 34,000. Roundworms, 21,000.
Real
water fleas, 23. Big numbers. If creation is true, the humans should have roughly 2,000.
And the actual laboratory tests were about 2,000.
So you're getting to the actual. The actual was between 1,200 and 2,900.
Right.
So right in line with the 2,000 of creation and not in line with the 36,000 for evolution.
Right.
Fruit flies.
Would predict 17, not 34,000.
Yeah, fruit flies, we'd predict 17, not 34, but the actual came in at 9 to 202.
Right. And the same with the roundworms
it
and
all
the water
work,
fleas.
Yeah. If you look at the evolution column, they're really big numbers in the tens of thousands. You look at the creation, it's in the dozens to thousands, and the actuals come in to dozens to 1,000.
So then Dr. Jeanson, who, did we mention that he got a PhD in cell and developmental biology?
At Harvard.
Did we mention
that? Yeah, we did.
Oh, we did, yeah. And he's a young earth creationist. You know how the atheist and the God haters, and even the theistic evolutionists even, will mock us saying, oh, you are flat earthers, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've covered the flat earth myth. There never was a Christian denomination, a school, leaders who taught the earth was flat.
Yeah, they can't point to a single scientist who was a creationist that was a flat earther.
Right. There's not a single scientist flat earther in the world, as far as I know. There are thousands of scientists like this guy who earned his PhD in molecular biology from Harvard, Dr. Nathaniel Jeanson. Yeah. There are thousands who believe the earth is young.
Yeah. Now, there is a guy, he runs the Flat Earth Society, and he, you know, he believes in a flat earth because he runs a society.
But he's not a scientist.
He's an evolutionist.
He's right. So the flat earthers are the evolutionists.
That's right.
That's so ironic.
Yeah.
So Fred, this Dr. Jeanson, he says this. He says, for species to be as genetically similar as they are today, yet as old as the evolutionists claim that they are, they would need to mutate only once every about 30,000 years.
Yeah.
Once every 30,000. We know from having children and finding out from the doctor that our child might have a mutation. We hear about stories like that.
Yep.
It's not once every 30,000 years.
Yeah.
So the evidence overwhelmingly is that life on Earth is young.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the mutation rate, when they compare humans and chimps, that the human-like creature evolving into a human over time would have to produce like 20,000 offspring. Oh. And that was using real conservative numbers.
Right, right.
So they'd have to really, really be busy. And 20,000 offspring on average generation.
To get enough genetic.
One couple.
Each couple.
Having.
To get enough opportunity for that many genetic changes.
To evolve even a tail.
But we also know with epigenetics and all, even if you mutated all those genes, which is, you know, Darwin gave us Darwinism. Dobzhansky gave us neo-Darwinism, which is its mutation in the genes, the alleles. We now know that the genes only tell a rudimentary part of the story because you go from sponges to bananas to people to chimpanzees, and it's sort of the similar toolbox of genes.
Yeah. If you get a mutation somewhere, it's going to affect a lot of things. We talked a couple weeks ago about how they found another code, another language on top of the DNA that does
that
a totally separate feature in the gene.
Yeah.
And so if you mutate that, and your story is going to be different for both languages.
Yep. So if these creatures were here for millions of years, then they could only have one mutation per 30,000 years. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
And I love how he answers objections. He has different objections that he lists, and he goes through each one. He says, this is how you deal with the objections to it. For example, he said that one objection would be, the results of this study are contradicted by the many evolutionary molecular clocks published previously.
Right.
And then he points out the problems with their
They're
clocks.
They're totally circular.
They're circular reasoning.
They say, we know humans evolved from chimps. So look at the chimp mitochondrial DNA. Look at the human, and we know how long it took. We know how to calibrate the mitochondrial clock.
And then they set it's it.
Totally circular.
And then they also set the ticking of clocks to the layers in the fossil record. And again, they're assuming an age on those fossils.
Right.
So it's completely circular reasoning. It's totally vaporous.
They date.
It's an illusion.
They date the fossils based on the rock layer, and they date the rock layer based on the fossils.
Yeah.
So it's circular. You know, that argument he just made, his rebuttal to that, it reminds me of the book Darwin's Doubt, New York Times bestseller. Mm-hmm. By Stephen Myers of the Discovery Institute. Fred, in his book, now he believes the Earth is billions of years old.
Yep.
He believes in the Big Bang, and he thinks life on Earth has been here for hundreds of millions of years. That's unfortunate. But he likes to point out the errors in the molecular clocks because the Darwinist, he's against Darwinism.
Yep.
The Darwinists say, we know when the fish evolved into, you know, land animals because we look at these molecular clocks. And he said, guys, you're cherry picking the data because you look at a molecular clock for one protein or for this gene or for mitochondrial or for nucleic acid. You know, you're looking at all these different things and the examples that don't prove your case, you ignore them. And the ones that do support your claim, those are the ones you use.
Yeah.
That's cherry picking the data.
Yeah, they're famous for doing that.
Right.
Yeah, it's saying that like shared mutations between humans and chimps and
right.
things like that. They cherry pick the data.
Well, Stephen Meyer and the Discovery Institute, they cherry pick the data.
They do.
With the very same example Myers put in his book, Darwin's Doubt. And I published this in the CRSQ. I did a book review on Darwin's Doubt.
Yeah.
And in there, I wrote about what he said based on hard research about histones.
Yeah.
These are these little proteins.
Oh, finally we get to that band in the 50s.
That,
all right.
Right. Our DNA our DNA is wound up on these histones. It's astounding. It's part of our epigenetic information. Well, these histone proteins, they are amazingly well conserved in all of life.
That means they don't get mutated.
Very few mutations.
Very robust.
And the examples they give, Michael Behe wrote about this
too. They don't rust.
They don't rust, right. Michael Behe wrote about this. Stephen Meyer wrote about, you know, Behe's Darwin's Black Box.
Yeah.
He's a molecular biologist, right?
Yep.
So he wrote about his stones too. And they pointed out that when they mutate them in the lab intentionally, they still work. So they could go in and change individual nucleotides, and the organisms continue to reproduce and live apparently healthy lives. That means that they are robust. Mm-hmm. They could handle mutations. Well, when they look at the histones in green peas across the kingdoms of life,
okay,
plants to animals, and they look at the histones in mammals, they're virtually identical.
I mean, virtually identical.
So what Stephen Myers does and what Michael Behe does is they make fun of the Darwinists and they say, why do you guys leave out the histones? Why don't you use that as a molecular clock?
Yeah.
Because if you did, you'd have to say that plants evolved from animals sometime in the last 3,000 years.
Yeah.
So you're cherry picking the data.
Exactly.
Of course they are, right? Well, Stephen Myers is cherry picking the data. And so is Michael Behe, because Fred, they think that these things have hundreds of millions of years between them. They believe the geologic record shows hundreds of millions of years.
Okay, so help me understand this. So they think there's this big gap between these things. So you mean the green peas and the green giant?
Green peas, whenever green peas came along, right?
Yeah.
Versus the green giant, right? The jolly green giant. Well, they have been on Earth, they think, the peas, for tens of millions of years.
Mm-hmm.
So their histone proteins, the gene coding for that, should have tons of variation as compared to mammal histones and to our histones.
Mm-hmm.
They're virtually identical.
Identical.
So they are cherry picking by
ignoring the piece of, that goes against their paradigm of millions of years.
So they should at least say, this evidence suggests that peas and mammals have been here the same amount of time and very recently.
It'd be okay if they use the word jaw-droppingly shocking.
Yeah, they could do that.
Yeah.
And they could even say, now, we believe they've been here for millions of years, but this evidence goes against our worldview, and we're sort of stunned by it.
Yeah.
But they don't.
Yep.
They use the histones to disprove the Darwinist molecular clock, but then they ignore the fact that they're there. It's fun.
Oh, it
what
is.
A great article, Fred. And this is really, it's by ICR.
Yeah, ICR.org. Just go there and search for genetic clock.
New genetic clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Genetic clock by Dr. Jeanson. So we want to thank ICR. The president now is John Morris. He spoke here at our group recently in Denver, denvercreation.org. So we're out of time. Our website, realscienceradio.com.
RSR.org.
That's the abbreviation, the shortcut. Click on the store. You can make a donation one time or every month. We need your help so badly to stay on the air and buy our science materials. You'll love them. May God bless you. That's what I'm talking about.